Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
All right, we get to Brian O'Driscoll in a moment. Just an update on the live football this evening. It is 1-1 now in Moldova. Dundalk equalised on the stroke of half-time against Sheriff. Spurs still 1-0 up in their game. While Celtic through to the next round, they left it late. A last-minute winner from Elianusi gave them a 1-0 victory against Riga. And in the Carabao Cup, Jordan Shaqiri's given Liverpool a 1-0 lead against Lincoln. Quarter of an hour gone there. Scoreless between Manchester City and Bournemouth. And Aston Villa 2-0 up at half-time against Bristol City. Now, let's talk to Brian O'Driscoll. Good evening, Brian.
Good evening, Nathan. How are you?
I'm very well. So we will look back on Leinster's defeat against Saracens, but we must reflect on a great Irish rugby career. We spoke about it on the news round earlier. Rob Kearney announcing today that he is stepping away from Leinster and from Ireland. I say stepping away because it does seem as though his career isn't done yet. A lot of speculation that he may move to Australia for the next few months to link up with the Western Force. And I'll run through it again. His hit list of honours is second to none. He is the most decorated player in Irish rugby history. 4 Six Nations, 2 Grand Slams, 4 European Cups, just the 6 Pro 14s, a couple of Lions tours, and the European Player of the Year in 2012. He did all right.
He did okay, didn't he? I think if you look back, you know, a lot of Ireland and Leinster's success culminated with him and a group of other players coming through, and their timing could not have been better. But what they added, and particularly what he added, kind of a steeliness and a comfort and a confidence. And to stay in that position, you know, for make it his own for the best part of 15 years is a testament to him as a pro, but as a really exceptional athlete that I don't always think got the accolades that he deserved. He was involved in every big day Ireland have had pretty much for the last 15 years. And that's not, you know, your list of accolades, that's not to mention the series win in Australia, the first in 40 years. The you know, double win against the All Blacks, one of which he was man of the match when, you know, when it was put to him by Joe Schmidt that I need a big game from you. Talk about delivering on cue. He has been a remarkable servant for Leinster and for Ireland. And you get the sense that I don't think we'll have a full appreciation for him until we have a bit of time without him. I think we're even seeing now some of the aspects of his play that he's renowned for. You know, Leinster are probably struggling in that department. So it's a really brilliant rugby career that hopefully has, you know, one more twist to it if he does head down to Australia. And why wouldn't you go down to top up that already delightful permatan that he seems to have.
I was reading a report earlier on in the Examiner from 2005, his debut for Leinster, a pre-season friendly against Parma when he scored a hat-trick. It was Robert Kearney back then. And you talk about timing, that was Michael Checa's first game in charge of Leinster. That steeliness when you describe Kearney, when he arrived into that dressing room as a young man, as a teenager, did you have any sense of that steeliness and that talent that was there?
Well, he came with a big reputation from schools rugby with Clongowes. I have a feeling he might have even played 13 in his final year. It was just a case of trying to get one of your best players the ball as often as you possibly can. And so, you know, there's one or two players every year that come out of school that make it into the academy that senior players, more established players would be aware of or would have heard, you know, reputationally to keep an eye on. But you have to earn that immediately. It's one thing being a schoolboy, great, but then you've got to show it at training every day. You've got to show it in the games when you are given that opportunity, usually through A games first, and then your slow introduction into the main senior team. So You know, he ticked all of those boxes very quickly. He had a confidence about him, you know, that bordered on that arrogance, which is exactly what you need, but on the healthy side of things, where he backed his ability. He felt as though he wasn't out of place even as an 18 or 19 year old, and that he was there, you know, physically to be able to live with the big boys. So, you know, he had all the attributes to stay in the game for a long time, which he's subsequently shown. But it takes a particular individual to come out of school and have the ability to translate schoolboy rugby into senior rugby, which are worlds apart.
Those attributes that you talk about on the pitch in terms of his ability under the high ball, the brilliance with his left boot, and you talk about appreciation, it is now that he's gone and he's been sort of moving away from it over the past 6 months to a year that there is, I think, a full appreciation of it now, because you're watching Leinster last Saturday and you're watching Jordan Larmour, and if he doesn't collect the high ball straight away, you're thinking, well, we've become used to this. We've had 15 years of Rob Kearney getting that and us not fully appreciating what a talent it was.
Yeah, I'm almost surprised, you know, that the cameras didn't pan to Rob Kearney every time that Jordan Larmour dropped a high ball a la Rog and Johnny, you know, because there's a real sense of that. And it feels as though they've come full circle where people have forgotten what Jordan is capable of in attack and now are focusing on, you know, some of his weaknesses. And people got a bit hung up on what Rob Kearney perhaps didn't offer to the same degree in attack as he did in defence. That said, I don't know too many times that Rob Kearney on counter-attack, even if he didn't choose the right option coming back, that he didn't break the first tackle. He had phenomenal strength and ability to fight in contact, didn't lose the ball very often. And albeit he didn't, you know, have, you know, incredible feet or, you know, didn't have electric pace, he still was a very proficient counter-attacker in the first 10, 12 years, probably the last few years, you know, not quite as effective. But his game was built on a stability. And as a result, Leinster and Ireland's success has been built on a stability. I don't think you can underestimate that as well, that the confidence as teammates, knowing that, the last man standing behind you is someone that has that confidence, that has that understanding of spatial awareness, of covering the backfield, of being a very good tackler, and then on top of being a good, you know, catch kicker of the ball that we always will associate with him. He was a lot more than that. And you don't get into Lions teams, you don't stay in the international game for being a one or a two trick pony. You have to have multifacets to your game, and he definitely had that. And I kind of feel as though the general public didn't always have a full appreciation for that with him.
Yeah, it's a real interesting point. It reminds me of John Giles talking about goalkeepers and when a team loses faith in a goalkeeper, how it just runs its way through the 11 and everybody's that little bit more nervous. That with Rob Kearney, you had this full trust that when that ball went in deep, you knew he'd collect it, you knew he'd do the right thing, and suddenly you can get yourself into position because you know exactly what's going to happen pretty much all the time.
Yeah, it's like the goalkeeper coming out and catching corners rather than punching them, right? There's an air of confidence that comes with that. You just had no doubt. It was a collector's item for him to drop one in a game, to not be the guy, you know, soaring up higher. And it's so rarely, he's not a small man. He's, you know, maybe 6 foot, you know, maybe a fraction over. But it's the timing of his jumps, getting up to that maximum apex position of catching the ball at his maximum height. That is an art form. And I think with Jordan Larmour, we're seeing that he's a coming player in that regard, but he's still got his timing off. Rob got it from a very young age. Now, he did have a great tutor in Gervin Dempsey of that side of the game, understanding field position, grass cover, you know, collecting high ball, but I think he brought it on to an altogether different level than Gervin. And now it's, you know, that's the standard bearer by which we expect, but you'll be surprised. In the next 5 years, I don't know, we'll have too many players who will get back to that standard. Maybe even the next 10, 15 years, that will be something that we'll look back and go, wow, that really was a phenomenal skill set that many have struggled to, you know, to climb to that standard.
Yeah, when we're having those debates about Ireland's greatest ever 15, we never need to leave much time at the end, because you know the conversation around fullback is going to be a pretty short one. It's going to be Rob Kearney, and you can sort of move on quite quickly. Just on his role in that golden generation then, and like the famous story of down in Enfield and his talk with the Munster players and what we wanted, give a side of maybe Rob Kearney that people hadn't seen either before or maybe since in his influence on the group. Like, that was a team with a lot of big personalities, a lot of big character. Yeah. What was his role within that dressing room?
Well, I have to say, I was shocked when he said it, when he, you know, stuck his head above the parapet and he came out with it. And I thought it was an incredibly brave thing to do for a guy that hadn't proven himself in front of all of those Munster players, for him to come out and show that level of honesty. I'm sure there were some people that were a bit disgruntled by it, but you know, it was right, the timing of it. He had just broken into the national team. He'd a handful of caps, I think. He maybe had a couple of caps, but he was about to become Ireland's full-time fullback in the following Six Nations. And I just thought, for a young guy willing to put his neck on the line, it just felt like a courageous thing to do, where something needed to be said, which would be to the betterment of the team overall, but yet in the short term, he might get it in the neck a little bit. And I have to say, I've always liked Rob. I'm obviously good friends with him. I always liked him from a young age. He was able to fit in with older players from straight out of school. He didn't make a fool of himself. He wasn't immature. He was quite mature for his age. So for him to come out as a 20-year-old and say that, I thought was an incredibly mature thing to do, and one that absolutely stood to him, because I'm sure he got respect, even though players mightn't have told him immediately. I'm sure they respect him, because he made people question whether the commitment to Ireland was the same as Munster. And I'm not saying it was or it wasn't, but it made people think about it and reinforce how important playing international rugby was for those players.
I mentioned four European Cups. He didn't play in the 2011 finals, but he bounced back the next year incredibly, ends up as European Player of the Year. And in the knockout stages, from the quarterfinal win against Cardiff, where he gets a couple of tries, the performance and the drop against Claremont, to the final against Ulster. Was that Kearney for you as a Leinster teammate, him at his peak? Big games,
big player?
Yeah,
well, I think coming back from the injury season that he'd had a very serious knee injury, missed the whole Heineken Cup, and definitely we're not giving him the four Heineken Cups, we're only giving him three, because we're on level peggings on that. I'm just holding on to him by fingernails in that regard. But he, people don't have an appreciation when there was talk of whether he'd come back from that knee injury. I remember he had to have puncture holes put into his patella, as far as I know. And the mental fortitude to be able to not only come back from something that could have been a career-threatening injury, but then to come back and produce your best form is quite something. And delivering in big games, big moments, the drop goal against Claremont in the semi-final, and that jog back to his position thereafter, which he's had the mickey taken out of him for many years. And then the try that he scored too, right after half time, getting us back in the game. He's been a big game player, and he's almost at his best when people start questioning him. And I think that's a real testament of the sort of personality that we're talking about, is that if you're able to dig deep for another 5 or 10% when there's question marks around you rather than crumble, I think they're the guys you want to be on the hard track, but they're the guys you want to be in the trenches with as well.
If Rob Kearney ends up listening to this, he'll go, "Geez, lads, I'm not dead. I'm not done yet. I've stepped away from Leinster in Ireland, and tributes are brilliant, but he still, it seems, is going to continue." All the speculation today seems to be that he's going to go to Australia. He's going to go to Western Force and may spend the next 6 months or so there. It certainly sounds like a very appealing move.
Yeah, and obviously a good reputation then in Australia. You know, like I mentioned, that series win, he was very impressive in those couple of games that he played in that series win. He what's not to like about Perth? Great Irish contingent down there, expats down there. It's a great part of the world, and playing fast, free-flowing rugby. And I get the sense, you know, we've had conversations. I'm sure he's taken advice from all sorts of all quarters. But if you think as though you've got a little bit left in the tank, I would encourage you to play on. And I think he feels as though there's still one more good season or you know, certainly a season if it ends up being down in the fourth, still left in the tank. He's in phenomenal condition at the moment. And you can't put, it's an intangible bringing someone of that level of experience and embedding them into a young system, a la Brad Thorne or any of our overseas players, Nathan Hines, these guys, you plug them into your system. It's what the other players that are training with them every day, the wealth of knowledge that they soak up from them is actually the real win. And that's why Weston Force, I'm sure, are interested in bringing him down there, obviously from the player perspective, but his IQ and his IP is right up there with the best of them.
Yeah, sure is. And we wish him well down there, and hopefully we get to chat to him over the coming weeks. The reason the announcement came this week was because Leinster's season is done. Came to a shuddering halt on Saturday against Saracens. There's been quite a fallout from this. There's been a huge amount of questions about what it means for Leinster, for the coaching staff, for Ireland. What did you make of it all? What went wrong?
The game is very simple, and I've listened to lots of people, and there's been some really interesting points of view. I listened to Stuart Barnes on Monday, talking with Liam Toland. I've listened to Matt Williams, his take on scrum penalties. You know, I listened to Rory O'Connor and Keith Wood, and everyone. You know, I'm not saying that their point of view isn't interesting. I feel the game of rugby is a very simple game when you become collision winners, and then subsequently very hard when you're on the, you know, the wrong side of winning collisions. On top of that, you put in a scrum that's running backwards, conceding 7 penalties, 9 kickable ones, and then on top of it, you don't get your accuracy at ruck like you would hope. How could you possibly be in a game when you lose all of those aspects? Yet after 63 minutes, when Jordan Larmour scored his try, they were 5 points behind. So I don't think you have to completely reinvent everything that you've done for the last number of years and throw the old game plan and go, it's not going to work. This is one of the best European teams we've ever seen in Saracens. Yes, they're, you know, missing 10 or 11 of last year's final, but you look, the guts of the English pack is from Saracens. These are a classy team set up brilliantly for cup rugby. So it's not the end of the world that on a day, two great teams, one beats the other, or, you know, it could so easily, if a couple of things had been fixed, it could have been Leinster's day. The margins are tiny, and they didn't win any of the big moments. Saracens won all of them, and ultimately that's where the momentum swung, and the unassailable lead in the end was what really caught Leinster. If they'd managed to keep it to a 10-point deficit going into the second half, having the win, they could have overturned it. But I just think 19 points was too much. You knew that Saracens were going to be able to weather some storm and show something in the second half, which they managed to do with that late penalty to make it safe.
I don't think anyone would have predicted that the scrum would have been so one-sided and that there would have been ending up 7 scrum penalties. But when you talk about the physicality and the collisions, were Leinster caught on the hop about the physicality, or, like, you're going up against Saracens, they played each other last season, they know each other inside out at this stage. How was it that the Saracen players ended up being so much more physical and winning so many of those collisions? And could Leinster have found a different way around that?
How do you prepare for that physically? You can't unless you come up against it. And you look at Leinster's pool stages. You know, they qualified after 4 rounds this year. They've cantered to the Pro 14. You know, a lot of the time playing their second team. Other than, you know, you look at the internationals, a lot of them would have played 5 and 6 games at most in the Pro 14. So it's impossible to actually simulate that quality of physicality unless you have the opposition, which they simply haven't. No one's been able to impose their game on Leinster like Saracens did and like they did previously in St. James's Park. And as much as mentally you're ready for it, physically it's a shock to the system. That said, they were on the back foot, they were losing collisions. they still were in the mix at the end. And I think that's testament to their steeliness of still being able to stay in the game when it wasn't going their way. But Saracens, you look at the, you know, they make no excuses for the way they play the game, you know, the box kicking, the bludgeon. But then they scored a masterful try as well. That was ultimately the difference between the two teams.
Yeah. Look, we'll make no excuses that our coverage is very Irish-centric and we'll always focus on the four provinces and on the Pro 14. And I think everyone was aware there was a pretty seismic gap between Leinster and everybody else. You're probably watching more of the English clubs than anybody else through your work with BT. Are Saracens getting that challenge? Are they getting a different challenge up to what's about to happen? But have they, over the last few years, domestically getting a far more physical challenge than Leinster would be in the Pro 14?
Yeah. Yeah, they have been. The Premiership is a far more physical tournament than the Pro 14, no doubt about it. It's a grind every single week, and nobody rolls over. If you know, even the perceived weaker teams, you know, have a brute force to them. And I suppose you look at, you know, teams like Bath now, for instance, who have emerged since COVID and are playing this high tempo, you know, high aggression, big physical game. You put, you know, Wasps in that category as well. They've got some huge ball players as well in there. You know, they are being, you know, they are learning their lessons, Saracens, on the hoof. They are definitely getting more physical encounters than Leinster have had over the course of the last 16 months. And it hardens the body. That said, there's no excuse, because these players that are playing for Leinster, the vast majority of them are playing international. So it's not like they haven't felt that level of physicality. But, there's not much between the top teams at, you know, a quarterfinal level. And, you know, Leinster just let them, you give away 9 kickable points. You know, they've won by 8, right? You take those 9 points away, it's a 1-point victory. So genuinely, I don't think you have to reinvent the wheel with understanding what went wrong, why it can be fixed, and what they need to do to actually, the next time they come up against Saracens, they just have to be a bit more clinical, a bit more detailed, and a bit more physical in winning those encounters. And then they'll set themselves up in a much better platform to win the next one. But it's always going to be hard against them.
So you've obviously been in these dressing rooms around these big championship games, won them, lost them, and the reaction is sort of from the outside, maybe throw toys out of the pram, rethink everything all over again, start from the beginning, because as good as we are domestically, European level, this isn't good enough. Do you think within the Leinster camp, with the experience that's there from Lancaster and Cullen, that actually heads will be quite calm, that this was possibly the two best teams in Europe coming head to head, didn't play at our best, but we're still on the right track? Or do you need to take a defeat like this and actually take a step back and regroup?
I think probably they'll be very disappointed, first of all, with their performance, because the Leinster season is judged on European performance and not Pro 14, and that's the reality. In fact, all of the Irish provinces have been like that. Munster for many years, maybe a little less so now because of their lack of success in Europe. But Leinster will be very disappointed. I do think it's potentially a bit of a changing of the guard. I think, without trying to retire guys a bit early, I think the dynamism that was lacking in certain positions in the pack became a bit evident. I think, you know, Devon Toner being subbed off with 5 minutes done in the second half, and Ryan Baird coming in and doing quite well, it felt like a real marker for me. When you look at the likes of Rob Kearney and Fergus McFadden and those guys retiring, it's time for the new blood to come through. And who knows, like Johnny Sexton, you know, certainly didn't have one of his best games, and Ross Byrne has done nothing wrong. So maybe we're going to see more of an integration of Ross and Harry Byrne coming to the fore now. But these defeats are always bitter. You know, no different than Saracens would have felt really bitter 2 years ago when they lost in the quarterfinal to Leinster marginally. You know, the roles reversed this time round, and they're hard to take because as older players, they're running out of their opportunities, and it feels like this is one that definitely would have has gotten away, because I think they wouldn't have lost anyone else in the Aviva other than Saracens.
You mentioned some of the analysis from during the week. So Stuart Barnes was on with us on Monday night, and a slightly different take on it when he was talking about Stuart Lancaster, saying that he saw a Leinster side that were playing a similar game to England in the early days under Lancaster, going sideways, no forward ball between the 10-metre line and the halfway line. Inevitably then they're giving away penalties and kickable positions, so Saracens are able to keep the scoreboard ticking over. And that Leinster were being micromanaged, so basically the players weren't able to think for themselves on the pitch in these crucial moments. Would you go along with any of that?
No, I don't think the there's a brains trust there, and you're talking about players that are smart footballers, and Johnny Sexton's obviously one of them. Gary Ringrose is another one of them. Without knowing him, Caelan Dorris appears to be one of them. James Ryan, likewise. So there's some pretty smart guys with good footballing intellect playing throughout the team. There was one point in the game when I was in commentary, and they were kind of going over and back between the 10 and halfway line, and I did mention about not punching themselves out. That they're going nowhere. You do after 3, 4, 5 phases of not doing anything, you do have to kick the ball. And that's not kicking the ball away, but you've got to kick it to regain it or think slightly differently when it's not working for you. Because all of a sudden, you run after 5, 6, 7 phases, you lose a collision, and straight away someone is on the ball and you turn it over and either a kick a goal or you're down into your own territory. I think there was times at the weekend that they could have played a little bit smarter and tried to play less football. But, I don't remember Stuart Barnes's Stuart Lancaster's early days, coaching England. I was still playing in those days, so I wasn't overly focused on what way England were playing. But you have to remember, they had a fair bit of success as well. They beat that All Black team a year after he took over from Martin Johnson. They were one defeat away from Grand Slams in certainly two of his four Six Nations. So, he wasn't doing a whole lot wrong. And that wasn't that good an England team around that time either. So I don't know. I think you could be overly critical. I do know that Stuart Lancaster thinks there's a great rugby intellect in Ireland. And I think as a result, he imparts and feeds an awful lot of information into these players because he feels as though that they can take it on board and pick and choose what to select out on the park. Rather than just going out and giving them free rein or giving a very simplistic game plan, I think he feels that elaborate ability to play the 15-man game is something that they're capable of taking.
Mm. And maybe again, that's that sort of transition that's happening. We forget that somebody like Will Connors is coming into the biggest game of his career, and that maybe we need to bear that in mind in the analysis. I guess part
of it is... First Euro start as well, the likes of Will Connors. And yeah, it didn't go for him, but... again, in all adversity, you've got to learn. What can you learn from that? I think he'll learn that when Cian Healy is struggling and he's having a tough day of it, he can't worry as much about Billy Vunipola breaking off the back of the scrum, and he's got to help his prop. Because, the least your worries is Billy Vunipola running into your outside half and making 10-metre gain versus giving away a penalty and a definite three-pointer the way Elliot Daly and Alex Good were kicking. So think about the initial issue, first of all, and deal with the secondary one, once you've sorted the first one.
The analysis as well, I guess, is based on not just Leinster Saracens, but also Ireland and England, and a pattern that's developing, and that a good group of these players. We look at Leinster and we look at that pack and we see the Irish pack, add in CJ Stander potentially, and they're going to come head to head in 6 weeks' time. This has happened previously in Six Nations over the last couple of years, that there's something about this group of players that I don't know if they've the Irish players spooked or whether they're just better currently than the Irish players, and what that means for the internationals upcoming and for next year's Six Nations, how Ireland get back that balance of power. How do they do that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they do have them spooked a little bit. I think they feel they have the impetus on them now. They have done the last three times they've taken them on, twice in Twickenham, once in Dublin last year too. So I feel as though that, their physicality and the size of them, they're a bigger team than us as well, and they're throwing their size around. And so we've to play slightly a little bit more clever. You know, when you can take someone on as well physically, you have to, you know, play with some nuances that will try and get you to that parity level, and think your way around the park a little bit more. But it does feel as though this England team at the moment is a bit better than us. And they were World Cup finalists. They should have won the World Cup. And they were a coming team for 18 months before that. So, you know, sometimes you can overthink things. They're a good team at the moment. Mm. England are more often than not one of the best teams in the world. We haven't always been. It's just that we've come off the back of a 6 or 7 year period where we've probably been better than we've ever been and more competitive than we've ever been. But in reality, England, with the, you know, the numbers they can choose from, with the strength and depth, with some of the athletes that they have, should they be better than us and more physical than us? Probably. And it's a bitter pill to swallow, but it's probably the reality. So we've got to think our way around, how do we move them? How do we shift them where they can't be as dominant as collision winners? And that's the challenge of someone like Andy Farrell now, because it's a tough challenge that lies ahead of them.
Yeah, we'll have plenty of time to chat about that over the coming weeks. Brian, unfortunately, we don't have time to get to the text from Pat, who was saying, following on from the news round rabbit hole you went down, does Rob make it into Brian's top five list of best looking Irish sportsmen?
Oh, does he what? He
sits. Who are the other four?
He sits. Would Jamie Dornan fancy himself as an Ulster winger under 19? So he slips in.
You have the worst
one.
Mates in the world. Dear God. Rob Kearney, Jamie Dornan. How do you sleep at night?
That's why. It's okay when they're younger than you, though, when you've moved on and you can live your life vicariously through them and you're married with kids and see what you're missing out on, but not really ever missing out on because you're not in that category.
All right, Brian. Great stuff. They can't analyze like you can, though, so you'll always have that.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Nathan. Thanks a lot.
Great stuff as always from Brian O'Driscoll. We shall talk to you soon. As Brian mentioned, we've had lots of great analysis all week. You can get all of that on the OTB Sports app. You can subscribe to our rugby section so you'll get Monday Night Rugby, Wednesday Night Rugby with Matt Williams during the week. And every time Brian O'Driscoll is on, you will get straight to your phone. We're going to take a quick break and then we're talking football.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.